AI agents are everywhere, automating tasks and making decisions at machine speed. But agents make mistakes. Just one rogue agent can do big damage before you even notice. Rubrik Agent Cloud is the only platform that helps you monitor agents, set guardrails, and rewind mistakes, so you can unleash agents, not risk. Accelerate your AI transformation at rubrik.com. That's rubrik.com.
What's going on, everyone, and welcome back to the Surprise Jab Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Ruger, surprising with new topics every single weekend, jabbing you with your daily dose of UFC, and we are back with another fantastic episode today as we are dropping our UFC Vancouver predictions for the upcoming UFC Vancouver card. Rainer Day Ritter looks for his fourth fight in 2025. He's being slept on for Fighter of the Year. I know that Merab is probably going to win it when we bring up new fights to kick off this episode, but Rainer Day Ritter, watch out for him. We have your full predictions and preview of that card on today's episode. As well, we have our NFL Week 7 quick picks ahead of the upcoming games this upcoming Sunday and Monday. I wish we had Saturday NFL games. That would be awesome. We also have a recap of the final episode of Season 9 of Dana White's Contender Series. 9.10 went down, and we have a lot of interesting things to talk about. Some new fighters with a lot of hype behind them. I was trying to say which ones won or not, but I decided to go with which ones are victorious, which there were a good amount. A lot of witches in there, which we don't like witches on here. We like Jesus. But I'll tell you what, I've been needing the Lord. As work has been stressful, guys. Work has been stressful as ever, and it's just because I have some big exams I need to pass to even do my job, so I need to nail those on Friday. So actually, I need to probably get this podcast wrapped up quickly so I can go study and actually pass and be a good, productive person in society. But I'll stop blabbering on. That's always what I do, because we're going to kick things off with a lot. And when I say a lot, I mean a lot of new fights. I don't even know where to begin. To be honest, we easily have almost 20 new fights to talk about. So I'm going to go through them real quickly and give some of my thoughts, because a lot is going on. So first up, UFC Qatar has a new fight. Muhammad Naimov is back, 5-1 in the UFC. Wins over Nathaniel Wood, Jamie Mularkey, and Bogdan Grodd. He's from Tajikistan, so Qatar, native country of his, and he'll be taking on Myron Santos. Myron Santos is 16-1 in the UFC. He won the Ultimate Fighter Season 32, and he's currently 3-0 in the UFC. Wins over Francis Marshall, Khan Offley, and Sodiq Yusuf last time out. I really like Myron Santos here, but something tells me if it goes to the judges, Muhammad Naimov will scam his way to victory. This is a good fight, though. It'll be on the prelims of UFC Qatar, I presume. And 13-3 versus a 16-1, that makes for a good, interesting fight. Another matchup for you, October 25th, UFC 321 in Abu Dhabi. Walter Walker, who unfortunately lost his opponent in Muhammad Usman, that's an L. The number 15th ranked heavyweight will be getting a new opponent, the debuting Louis the Vanilla Gorilla Sutherland. I'll be very curious to see how this one goes. Louis was supposed to debut against Justin Taffa. Justin pulled out, so I'm very thankful we're able to get these two fighting each other here. They've been itching to get a fight in, and they just haven't been able to. Vulture is 14-1, and Louis the Vanilla Gorilla Sutherland is 10-3. You know the last man who had a Vanilla Gorilla nickname? Chase Sherman. Yeah, where's he at right now? Nowhere to be seen. UFC Vegas 110 on November 1st has a new fight as Miles Chapo Johns takes on Muin Gafurev. Muin is 20-6. Miles is 50-4. Very impressive records, but in terms of the UFC, 6-4 record for Miles, 2-2 for Muin. Muin does hold a win over Ringyam Nakamura, biggest win of his career. And as for Miles Chapo Johns, holds a win over Adrian Yanez. So both these guys are probably going to be hunting to get some momentum with a win as they approach their early 30s. So we'll see which one does the best. And UFC Vegas 110, it's a decent fight. We'll say that as far as that goes. UFC 323, we have a lot of fights to talk about, but one fight that is kind of flew under the radar here, December 6th, Marvin Vettori. Marvin Vettori is back for his second fight of 2025 to take on Bruno Fajera. Bruno is an absolute nasty man. He's 5-2 in the UFC, and I'll tell you, he's been killing it. He really has, all wins, all finishes, and 14-2 record. This is a big opportunity for him, but I don't know, Marvin Vettori, he's 19-9, 9-7 in the UFC, and he did have a tough fight last time out against Roman Dolidze. Actually, I just realized Marvin Vettori's back for his third fight of the year. He's lost to Dolidze, and he's lost to Brendan Allen, actually. Wow, I've completely forgotten. So Marvin in desperate need of a win here when he takes on Bruno Ferreira. I wish him luck. That's all I'm going to say. UFC Vegas 111, November 8th, has a new featherweight matchup as Haider Amil steps in on short notice to take on Jamal Emmers. It was supposed to be Austin Bashee taking on Jamal Emmers, but I actually like Jamal Emmers' chances here more against a fellow striker. However, I am going to go with Haider Amil. I just think he's been far much better beating Jiang Li and William Gomez in the UFC. And as for Jamal Emmers, I mean, he actually holds a win over Cork Sandhagen and Alexander Hernandez. Huh. That must have been way back in the day. Yeah, that one goes down. Should be a decent prelim matchup. Someone's probably going to sleep. That's my prediction. UFC 323, the final pay-per-view of the year, has a matchup in the lightweight division as the 14th-ranked Grant KGD Dawson takes on Manuel Torres. Manuel picked up a big win over Drew Dober last time he fought and has earned him a ranked shot against Grant Dawson. Now, it's clear to see that Grant Dawson hasn't done well against fighters like Manuel Torres, power strikers that are a bit taller. So I'll be curious to see how he does here. He only has one loss in the UFC. It's to Bobby King Green. But other than that, he hasn't done necessarily anything too impressive. Does hold a win over Carlos Diego Ferreira by a finish, which was good. But yeah, I'm probably going to ride with Manuel Torres here. He's 16-3, and I think 15 of those are by finish. So someone's going out in this one by submission or by knockout. We will have to tune in to see. Next one up, UFC 322. I cannot believe this fight's being made right now. Like, actually, when I saw the announcement, I thought it was one of the fake accounts on Twitter. But a welterweight division bout, main card UFC 322, Sean Brady, the number 2 ranked welterweight, takes on the number 8 ranked welterweight, Michael Morales. This is crazy. We have an 18-1 Sean Brady fighting a 18-0 Michael Morales. I don't even know. Like, I genuinely don't know. Michael Morales has been knocking guys out like crazy. Sean Brady has been taking guys out and submitting them like crazy. This is the biggest 180 of fight styles. I mean, Michael Morales, 18 wins, he either has 13 or 14 knockouts. Sean Brady, 18 wins, he either has 13 or 14 submissions. Like, Sean Brady's all about the submission game. Michael Morales is all about the knockout game. And, you know, Michael Morales last time out finished Gilbert Burns in round one, domination. As for Sean Brady, he finished Leon Edwards last time out and looked very good doing it. So I'll be interested to see how this one goes. I'm leaning Michael Morales, but I'll have to see how I feel come November 23rd. This is going to be November 15th. This is going to be a fantastic fight. UFC 322, they have loaded up, and especially for UFC 323, it is not going to disappoint either, as we have a bunch of fights to tell you about right now. I think the rest of the fights I have to tell you guys about are all happening at UFC 323. Yes, all the rest of the fights I'm about to tell you are on the same card. Mind you, you already got Marvin Vettori and Bruno Ferreira on there. That's a great fight unto itself. You also got a Grant Dawson, Manuel Torres. Another good fight. They just get better from here. UFC 323, December 6th. I don't even know if this is going to be on the main card, but the number 3 ranked flyweight, Brandon Moreno, is back finally to take on Tatsuro Taira. That's right, Tatsuro gets his shot to take on Brandon Moreno, and I'm all here for it. I really am. I think it's going to be fantastic. They, you know, I will say this is a bit of a step up highly for Tatsuro Taira. This is a man who beat Young Sung Park pretty easily, but that's a unranked fighter currently. And as for Brandon Moreno, we've seen him turn away Kai Kerr France. We've seen him turn away Amir Albazi. We've seen him turn away Brandon Rival. I mean, we've seen him turn away a lot of guys before. So I'll be curious to see if Moreno can get it done here as well against Tatsuro Taira. I'm a big Tatsuro Taira fan, so I may be a bit biased in my prediction, but he's 17-1. And he's only 25 years old. I'm excited. It's kind of the new guard versus the old guard. And by the way, Brandon Moreno is only 32. So this guy has a lot more time left to really get it going in his career. We'll see how this goes. But yeah, big fight for UFC 323. This one, I can guarantee, will be on the prelims of UFC 323. Still a banger. Lightweight division, Terrence T-Rex McKinney is back to take on Chris the Problem Duncan. T-Rex, 17-7 in his professional career, 7-4 in his UFC career. And he's never been the distance. I don't even know if this guy's been in round three. I'm being dead serious. I swear, like, 80, it's either 75 or 80% of his fights have ended in round one. It's utterly insane. Now, as for his opponent, Chris the Problem Duncan, you know, he's another finisher out here. You know, he's gone out. He's beaten Charlie Campbell. Big win over Matheus Rebeke last time out. I mean, he's 5-1 in the UFC, and he has been making a name for himself. Now, I will say, this is just if Chris Duncan can survive Terrence McKinney right off the bat, and if Terrence McKinney can eat the punches of Chris Duncan. But I like McKinney's odds in this one. He's coming off a big finish of Vyacheslav Borshov last time out, so I'll be excited to see this one prelims for UFC 323. Speaking of a man Terrence McKinney beat way back in the day, he hasn't lost since that fight. The 17-4 fair smile killer Zayam is fighting on the same card, prelims of UFC 323, as he takes on Nazim the Black Wolf Sadiqov. Now, I don't know how to say this. I hope one of them pulls out. This fight should not just be on the random prelims. It just shouldn't be on the prelims. It shouldn't be happening right now. Fairzayam is on a 6-fight winning streak. He's been looking incredible. And, you know, he's supposed to fight in Paris. His opponent pulled out. And as for Nazim Sadiqov, this is a guy who I thought was going to get a ranked opportunity. I kid you not. For a Grant Dawson fight, I'd have thought they'd have gone Manuel Torres Fairzayam and gone Nazim versus Grant. I mean, Sadiqov is 11-1 professionally, 4-0 in the UFC, and he's just been insane. He really has. So I'll be very interested to see how this fight goes. I mean, Nazim versus Nicholas Mota last time out in Azerbaijan was wild. So this is going to be fantastic. Top to bottom is just 10 out of 10. And it's guys, UFC 323 is going to be unreal. And you know, want to know another fight? I mean, I'm assuming this is on the main card. I don't even know, but a light heavyweight division matchup as the number 4 ranked former light heavyweight champion, Jan Blachowicz, who, by the way, is 42 years old. Is that not crazy? Takes on the number 11th ranked Bogdan Gustav. Bogdan's been on a roll. Just recently knocked out Nikita Krylov. Before that, it knocked out Ryan Spann. I mean, he has been killing it. I mean, he really has. And he gets a big shot here against the 4-ranked Jan Blachowicz. Now, Jan, still searching for his 30th career win. I think this is a very winnable fight for him. I will say, last time out against Carlos Ulberg, left little to be desired. He's kind of just become a decision fighter as of late. But, you know, with him being 29-11-1, I know for a fact he is hunting for that 30th win. I know for a fact. And as for Bogdan, he's 18-3. He has like 17 or 13 finishes. He wants to be a top 5 ranked fighter. And I like both the odds here, so I'll be curious to see who I go with here. I'm glad it's not till December 6th. I have a lot of time to see what takes place, but a fantastic matchup all around. Next up, this one I'm assuming is also on the main card. So this is probably the most random fight. You know, there's a lot that have been random this year. This one may take the cake. As Henry Triple C Cejudo, the number 10 ranked bantamweight, former flyweight and bantamweight champion, who hasn't gotten a win, by the way, since 2020. I mean, this guy has been on a little losing streak, losing to Song Yadong, losing to Aljamain Sterling. By the way, both split decisions. Who else did he lose to? Didn't Henry Cejudo lose to Merab? I mean, yeah, rough streak. But he takes on the 10-1, 27-year-old Peyton Talbot. That's right, Peyton Talbot. All right, Peyton Talbot goes out there, starts off the year, loses to Raoni Barcelos. Humbled, unbelievably. Then goes out, gets a decent decision win over Felipe Lima, and they're like, alrighty, you're good to go take on the number 10 ranked Henry Cejudo. I mean, what? Kind of ridiculous. They must see something in Peyton Talbot that clearly we're missing, but I probably am going to go with Henry Cejudo here. I mean, I know that he is a decade older than Peyton Talbot, but I mean, come on. Peyton should probably just get taken down over and over by Cejudo unless he catches him. I don't know, but this is such a random fight. I can't even believe it was made. UFC 323, you've outdone yourself. And I'll tell you what else is outdoing yourselves. The co-main event, the flyweight championship. That's right, Pantoja Van. It's happening. Alexander Pantoja going for his, I think, second title defense of the year. I think he only fought Kai Kerfrans this year, which is unfortunate, but he was able to get two in last year. So Pantoja's back to take on the number one ranked Joshua Van. And Joshua Van is 23 years old. Yeah. Yeah, actually, I think he turned 24 October 10th. So he's 24 now, but I mean, I don't know what age John Jones was, but Joshua Van has an opportunity here to become one of the youngest UFC champions of all time. I really like Joshua's odds here. His striking style, I do find superior to Alexander Pantoja, but in terms of takedowns, you know, in terms of submission, Gotta go with Alexander Pantoja. Gotta go with him here. This is gonna be fantastic. I'll see how I'm doing on picks. If I've ended the year on a really good spree, oh, you best bet that I'm going to be rocking with Joshua Van here. But if I'm in kind of a territory where I'm like, yeah, Pantoja's probably gonna get this done, I'll ride with him. I don't know. I love the idea of Joshua Van just coming down short notice over and over and over again. Joshua Van is 8-1 in the UFC. And I think 66% of his fights have been on short notice. Like, it's something ridiculous. So he has a full camp for the championship fight, and it's a great co-main matchup. Because what is the main event? The rematch. Bantamweight division, Merab versus Petr Yan. Who'd have thought that in 2024, Petr Yan would have... Was it 2024? I'm trying to remember. It was March 11th of... It might have been 24. Honestly, I have no idea, guys. I think it might have been March of 2024 that Merab Dvalishvili beat Petr Yan. You know, he handled business. He got it done. Actually, now that I'm thinking about it, it might have been 2023. I think 2023, Merab beat Petr Yan. Because then they were having Merab just fight all over the place. Then he took on Henry Cejudo. Alrighty. So it's been 2 years in the making, and Merab has just been off spree. This is his fourth title defense of the year. That's never been done in UFC history. He's also on a 14-fight winning streak. He also just destroyed Corey Sandhagen. And I mean, Petr Yan, I gotta give it to him. He has rebuilt his career. You know, he's gone out there. He's beaten Deiveson Figueiredo. He's beaten Song Yadong. He recently beat Marcus McGee. And, you know, now he's getting a title shot. So can't deny him. Petr Yan, no mercy. Yan gets one last crack at the belt. That's what I'm gonna say, because Merab's never losing this. I don't see ever going up in weight. I just don't see it being possible for him to go to featherweight and find the same success unless he can. So we'll have to see. But main event, I'm sad it's not Volkanovski. I really am. But however, they must be building something with him. So I'm going to put my faith in the UFC. So Merab, Petr Yan, your main event for UFC 323. It will be the final championship fight, the final pay-per-view main event of the year. Actually, it'll be the final championship fight on ESPN before we move to Paramount. How about that? So I definitely expect it to be a wonderful card. I mean, listen to all the fights we just mentioned. UFC 323 is already, and we will be watching it. I'll tell you what else we were watching. That was Dana White's Contender Series, and boy, do we have some things to talk about. This was a very interesting episode. I think it was a perfect way to end the night. Really was. I mean, I had a blast. Only one fight went the distance, and we have 5 new contracts being handed out, and even one guy being invited back for next season. I'm pumped. Let's talk about it right now. First up, middleweight matchup, Wes Schultz and Mario Mingage. And I was sleeping on Wes Schultz. I really was. I overlooked him. I didn't see much in him. And Mario Mingage was from Italy. And I was like, we need more Italian fighters. Well, what did Wes go out there and do? Well, he knocked Mario down. He took him down twice. And then he locked in a Sulov stretch in under 2 minutes. Yeah, this guy is going to be a problem. 8-2 now. Only losses are to Mansour Abdul-Malik and, oh my gosh, who was the other guy that he lost to in LFA? I'm trying to think. Dylan Budka, who also fought a couple times in the UFC. He sucked, but Mansour is super good. But Wes Schultz runs through Mario Mingage. Clearly, Mario is not UFC caliber, but Wes is. I mean, 2 takedowns, a knockdown, and a Sulov stretch in 1:51. That's been one of the greatest Dana White's Contender Series performances I've ever seen. I mean, it really was, and he's going to come into the middleweight division, definitely fight someone good, definitely fight someone talented. Wes is really in his prime. I mean, this kid is 31 years old, and he is ready to take over. Actually, I think he's 29 even. He might even be more so in his prime than I was thinking. But yeah, Wes beats Mario Mingage, is joining the UFC, and Mario, I don't know. You know, I don't really know. Kind of a rough showing for you, but Wes, very good work. Next up was one of the worst fights in Dana White's Contender Series history. Funnily enough, a great start and then an awful fight. Jovan Lekka beats Azamat Nuftaliev, and it's a boring unanimous decision. 29-27, 29-27, and 29-28 are the final judges' scorecards. And Dana White walks out of this fight with 30 seconds left to go do who knows what. But we open the round, and Azamat Nuftaliev just goes for takedowns. Gets 3 of 6 on Jovan Lekka. 4:39 of control time. It was ridiculous. Easily goes to Azamat. Boring. We open round 2. Azamat just fails one takedown. It is then, you know, Jovan goes for a submission, ends up on top, and controls him for 4 minutes and 43 seconds. And Azmat doesn't land a single significant strike, doesn't land a toe strike. In fact, on the record, he only threw and attempted one strike. I mean, he didn't land anything. It was awful. We get to round 3, and Jovan and him both land a takedown. Jovan's is more successful, and she gets 3 minutes of control time. So, boring all the way, just anywhere you look at it. And so, Dana, on the post-fight interview, said, you know what, Jovan, you had a terrible performance, but you're only 23. Come back in a couple of years, and we'll have another look at you. So, Jovan improves to 11-2, and as for Azmat Naftali, he is never coming back. Let me tell you that they are never inviting him back to Dana White's Contender Series. One of the worst fights in Dana White's Contender Series history, but I have seen worse. I can't lie, I have seen worse on here. And by the way, from here, it just got better. Next up, Michael Oliveira and Victor Valenzuela in welterweight. Look out, Michael Oliveira is coming for everyone. Round 1, pretty similar, you know, 22 significant strikes to 17. Michael's barely edging him out, but he's landing a bit harder strikes, you know, but still back and forth. Round 2, explodes, 3 knockdowns, 53 significant strikes to 13. Props to Victor. Props to Victor for surviving as long as he did, but I mean, 3 knockdowns in under 4 minutes. I mean, it was from the get-go, getting hit and then just laying some vicious ground and pound. And finally, after the 3rd knockdown and some hammer fist, Keith Pearson was like, yeah, this guy's done for, and Michael Oliveira wins 9-0. 100% finish rate, you don't get much better than that. As for Victor, he'll fall to 12-4, and you know what? You got to find the Contender Series victor. Not everyone can say that. But yeah, Oliveira is going to be an absolute killer. Welterweight division, I'll throw him in there with some higher ranked level welterweights. We're going to mention a couple fares on here, but you got a fight between Danny Barlow and DeJordan Santos. I would love the winner of that to fight Michael Oliveira. I truly believe that this guy can hang with some of the best at 170 pounds. So keep your ears open for the name Michael Oliveira as he gets it done. Very nice work. Charles Oliveira, Michael Oliveira. Big week for Oliveira's. Next up, I don't know if I want to say this is the greatest comeback in Dana White's Contender Series history, but I might say it. I don't know. As Marwan Rahiki literally comes back from the grave to beat Anais Mulumba. I mean, this fight was insane. It may have been one of the craziest Contender Series fights I've ever seen. I mean, went into round 2, 2 minutes and 13 seconds into round 2. Marwan Rahiki knocks Anais out cold. But I mean, this was wild. This was wild. Round 1 starts off, and Anais drops him early, and he's laying some crazy ground and pound. And shout out Mark Smith. Shout out Mark Smith for laying this play out, because Marwan ate so many strikes. I mean, then he's just covered up on the ground. Then he gets back to the cage, and then he dropped Anais Mulumba. I mean, it was insane. And then they're still going back and forth, and Anais drops him a second time. And then he goes for a submission attempt as well. It was crazy. And when we went to a stool, these two were gasping. By the way, Marwan, every time he was eating on the fence, he'd fire back, and it was crazy. We go into round 2, and it's all Marwan Rahiki. The Australian is just in his bag. Eventually, he's able to clip Anais, send him slumping to the canvas, and it was GG's. Marwan Rahiki, who, by the way, trained with Marab. They don't put that on tapeology that these guys train with world-class athletes, but he's 7-0. His nickname is Freaky, and after that win, you best bet we're getting Freaky. I mean, phenomenal. Phenomenal stuff. Featherweight division, look out. Look out. I mean, oh my goodness. Oh my goodness. That's all I can say to that. This was fantastic. And as for Anais, they're going to bring him back. Like Dana White literally said, you know what? This kid's 9-3. Go out, get 1 win, get 2 wins, get no wins. You'll come back on the next season of Contender Series. So once we're back, you're going to see Anais Mulumba again, but just nuts. Just nuts. I mean, Marwan Rahiki, I'm excited to see him in the featherweight division. It's going to be fun. Next up, second to last matchup of the evening. You had Juan Diniz knocking Quan Wonil out cold with a spinning back elbow. 2 seconds left in round number 2. And Quan Wonil, this was a guy who had fought for the one championship, bantamweight title. Earlier in January, he had gone like 9-5-1. I mean, this was a guy who had been fighting top-level contenders overseas. But what he didn't realize is that they ain't all built like the overseas guys. No, some guys are built different, as the 15-1 Juan Diniz knocks him out cold with the first ever spinning back elbow in Contender Series history. On Season 9, Episode 10, we got our first ever spinning back elbow knockout. I don't know how We never had gotten that before, but I guess we hadn't. And you know what? Juan Díaz lands it, gets the crowd going, and Dana White is so excited to have him in the UFC. And I'm excited to see him. I mean, clearly this guy's good. Clearly he can hang with top-level bantamweights. And, you know, there's going to be guys out there. There's going to be a Marcus McGee out there for him to fight, a Kyler Phillips. This guy is clearly ready to fight top-level competitors outside of the UFC. And, you know, let's not give this guy any exemption to getting top-level talent, right? When he comes in, I think he's ready. He's 27. He's in his prime, and he just landed one of the best knockouts of the season. Juan Díaz. I keep calling him Díaz, but I think it's Díaz. Hey, maybe he'll be better than the Díaz brothers one day. You never know. With that, we got into the final matchup of the season, and holy cow, it almost went terrible. Freddie Vidal back for the second time this season as he was given one last shot as he takes on the 23-year-old baby monster, Levi Rodriguez Jr. And from the get-go, Freddie is just hugging and failing at a takedown on Levi Rodriguez, and Dana White's pissed. Dana White is complaining on the sideline. He is like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that this guy's just doing this. And then, so, you know, Freddie then eventually is stuffed. Levi is holding him against the cage. Eventually, Freddie is like going for an awful takedown attempt. And we're just seeing Levi look like he's clipping him over and over. And then eventually Levi lands a massive knee, sits Freddie down on his back and lands some nasty grounded pound. And the fight's over 3 minutes, 20 seconds. And you already know they gave Levi the contract 6-0 and saved the night. Phenomenal, easily great work for Levi Rodriguez. He then, as Dana White put it, cut a podcast on the mic with Laura Santos. I mean, this dude would not stop talking. Shout out to our announcer. I don't know his name, or the translator from Brazil. He's the known guy. This dude was just talking for easily 2 minutes. I mean, translating, like talking 2 minutes straight, which may be like, oh, that's not a long time. 2 minutes straight talking is longer than you think when you're live on an ESPN broadcast. It was nuts. It was crazy. And it was a great way to end the season. But yeah, Freddie Vidal not earning any props in the UFC. This guy was brought back. One more opportunity in the UFC. Trains with Aljo, or at the same gym as Aljo Mirab. And this guy is just a hugger, just a holder. And it was just like, dude, what are you doing? You get one shot and you're blowing it. So great work to all the fighters on here who actually showed up, who actually fought. They earned their opportunities. And I'm so pumped to watch some of them in the UFC. But yeah, that's all we got for Dana White's Contender Series. Season 9 was a great success. It was probably my favorite season I've ever watched. I've watched a lot of seasons of Contender Series, and this one has easily been my favorite so far. So I bid you adieu, Contender Series. Until next year, until next time, bonsoir. But guess what? We're back already, not with the Contender Series, but with NFL football. That's right, ladies and gentlemen. That is right. We have got a bunch more matchups. We have 15 games. We have two teams on a bye this week. I know one team's the Ravens, which kind of sucks as I really need some Ravens players to show up. But I forgot what the other team is. But nonetheless, 15 games, 15 picks must be made. We're 60-32 on the year, which isn't too bad. We're in the top 84,000 on ESPN. I think that's pretty good. But we got a lot of games to talk about. Here's your NFL quick picks for week number 7. And we kick things off. Steelers visiting the Bengals. And you never know. You never know with these matchups on Thursday Night Football, Monday Night Football, which way it's going to go, especially with divisional games. Well, I'll tell you one thing, is that the Bengals are better with Joe Flacco than they were with Jake Browning. That much I'm sure. And I know Jamar Chase is going to find more success, but here's the issue. Bengals are on a 4-game losing streak. Steelers are on a 3-game winning streak. The Bengals have zero momentum. Now, they're at home. They're playing the Steelers. They're obviously on Thursday Night Football, but I got to go with the Steelers here. I truly believe that, you know, this could be an upset. This really could. But Joe Flacco has played the Steelers so many times, it's vice versa as well. Mike Tomlin knows Joe Flacco. He knows the Bengals. And this Bengals team isn't just like Joe Flacco's issue. Their defense cannot stop the offenses. Chase Brown refuses to reciprocate the amazing performances he put on last year. And Jamar Chase and T. Higgins can only do so much as the rest of the team allows. So, going to go with the Steelers here. A-Rod is ready to cook. And I absolutely love that if you were to tell us a decade ago that it would be Aaron Rodgers and Joe Flacco 1v1ing on Thursday Night Football, and they would be the starting quarterbacks for the Steelers and Bengals. I'd have called you crazy, but nonetheless, here we are, 2025, and that's the reality we live in. But yeah, I also have the Steelers defense. I got Chris Boswell in a league, so we are going to be rooting for the Pittsburgh Steelers. With that, we are back in London. We're back in London, the Rams visiting the Jaguars, but in reality, they're both just visiting London. They're both enjoying their time in London, and if there's one thing you know, if you know ball, it's that the Jaguars thrive in London. Plus, the Rams might have lost Puka Nacua. They really might have, and they just put up a dud, really, against the Ravens. I know they beat the Ravens, but I mean, nothing impressive. Really, nothing impressive. Is kind of a disastrous win, you know, if that's even a term you can use, a disastrous win. But yeah, Rams, I guess they have some momentum. You know, they're coming in off of a win here. They're 4-2. They're good. But, you know, I'm liking the Jaguars here. Jaguars usually do well in London. This is obviously a 50-50 game, and they lost a close one last week. They really did. You know, that Seahawks game was so winnable. And even though Trevor Lawrence had his best game of the year, or actually second best, he was just a step behind. So we are going to go with the Jaguars. They're also plus 145 underdogs. I think they're a great underdog pick if you're looking for that. And your best bet, we're riding with the Jaguars in London. With that, we get into Sunday football. That's right. We got a little noon game slate here. And we kick things off with the Saints and the Bears. The Bears, and if you didn't know, the Bears are on a roll. The Bears are on a roll. They picked up a massive win over the Commanders, and after starting 0-2, they've won three straight. Now, unfortunately, they are in the NFC North, which is a very good division, so they are last. They are last in the NFC North, but fear not, you're on a three-game winning streak, and you get to host a team, which is the New Orleans Saints. And the New Orleans Saints suck. Okay, they're 0-2 on the road. They're 1-5, and I don't see any benefits. I don't really see any high spots for the Saints team. The only thing the Saints have on their side is the Bears are the Bears. And the Bears just sometimes randomly lose. But I cannot go against the Bears here, like logically thinking if I'm picking the Saints, it's just because they're a plus 200 underdog. Because other than that, their defense is mediocre. Alvin Kamara is kind of in the later stages of his career. Spencer Rattler is just kind of mediocre. And seeing what the Bears defense, seeing what the Bears offense even too, can do against a team like the Commanders really makes me like the Bears here. So I'm going to go with the Chicago Bears to miraculously, I can't even believe it, start 4-2 on the year. And yeah, we expect the Saints to be bad this year. But, you know, they have their high spots. You know, Rashid Shaheed, Taysom Hill, they're still beauties. But yeah, Bears over Saints, lock it in. Next up, Dolphins visiting the Browns. This one's close. This one's tricky because both teams are awful. Both teams are legit awful. Dolphins are 1-5. Browns are also 1-5. And the Dolphins have lost two straight. Dolphins are winless on the road. And for the Browns, their only win of the year was actually at home. That's right. The only game they've won all year has been at home. And coincidentally, it was against the Packers, a very, very good team. Now, I think Dylan Gabriel is slowly finding his footing, slowly, you know, figuring out what he can do, what he can't do. But for the Dolphins, you know, it really makes no sense why they aren't good. Like, I can't even find a reason. You know, they have good wide receivers. They have good running backs. You know, Tua should be a good quarterback. But, you know, as underdogs here, I got right at the Dolphins. There's just no way A-Chain gets stuffed like that. There's no way they're stunting A-Chain like that. I don't see it. Now, the Browns, they're coming in. They suffered a loss to the Steelers last week, which was bad. And for the Dolphins, I mean, they always lose. They really always lose. And they lost a winnable game against the Chargers. They had that game locked. They were going for their second win of the year, and they just choked it right at the end. So I am going to pick the Dolphins to get this done as another underdog pick. I think it's a great pick overall. Next up, we have some divisional battles. No, we have a conference battle. As the Patriots, the best team in the AFC East, as they take on the worst team in the AFC South, the Titans. Titans, who are 0-2 at home, oddly enough, are the second worst team in the league. They are 83. Oh, no, they are the third worst somehow. They have an 83-point differential, which is one bet. Oh, no, they have an 83 points on the year. That's what I was trying to say. Their offense is awful. They've also given up 161 points. They've been terrible. And as for the Patriots, they've been good. 4-2, three straight wins, 3-0 on the road. Drake May getting it done. I mean, I'm picking against the Titans and Saints, baby, all year. Jets 2, Browns 2. The odds are I'm picking against all of them all year. So we are going to go with the Patriots to get this one done. I don't even need a real reason. At the end of the day, they're just a better team. That's all I'm going to say. Next up, Raiders visiting the Chiefs. Raiders are at plus 600. Chiefs are minus 1,000. Ooh, so tempting. So tempting to want to pick the Chiefs, or not the Chiefs, the Raiders here, but yeah, gotta go with the Chiefs. There's just no logical reason to pick against Kansas City, especially if they're getting a big win over the Lions. They're 3-3 on the year. They've gone 2-1 at home, which is good. And for the Raiders, they're 2-4, worst team in the AFC West. They didn't get a win last time out. They did get a win, but they're 1-2 on the road. So, Ashton Gentry, do your thing. I really hope you do. But, yeah, we got to go with Kansas City. Next up, Eagles and Vikings. And I don't know. I really don't know. I will say this is a great week to play the Eagles. They've lost two straight. Just lost by 17 to the Giants. Before that, lost by 4 to the Broncos, where they were winning, by the way, by 2 touchdowns. So I'm catching them at a good time. As a Vikings fan, especially for the Vikings team, we're catching them at a good time. Now, for the Vikings, they're like the Bears. They're unpredictable. We won last week. Will we win this week? I don't know. So Vikings are plus 115. As an underdog, you know I have to predict them. But my issue is I want Jordan to do good, and I want Devontae Smith to do good. I don't know if I should bench them both. I really don't. So Vikings over the Eagles as a biased Vikings fan. Plus, we got to beat the Eagles at some point. We always lose to the Eagles. It has to be the Vikings here. I really hope so. Last noon game, the Panthers will be visiting the Jets. And yes, guys, yes, I really feel that if there's any week the Jets are going to win, it is maybe going to be here. But unfortunately, Panthers have momentum. Panthers have won two straight games this year. But another good fact to know, is the Panthers are 0-3 on the road, but 3-0 at home. So if there's any opportunity for the Jets to win, it's here. Now, mind you, they are also 0-4 at home. They have been bad. They have been really, really bad. And, you know, it's been rough. Last time out against the Broncos, it was a great opportunity to win, and they couldn't get it done. But fear not. Fear not, because I think this is their week. It has to be. It's the Panthers. It's just a team where I just could see them losing. And will they really lose again? I don't know, but something tells me once the Jets win, once I see that underdog hit, it's all going to be worth it. So I'm going to go with the Jets to beat the Panthers here. I've been picking a lot of home teams, but something just tells me this is their week. All the teams they're going to beat this year, I really think it's got to be the Panthers. I mean, looking ahead, you know, Browns, Bengals, Patriots, Ravens, Falcons, Dolphins, Jags, Saints, Patriots, Bills. They actually have such a winnable schedule, but they've just been playing awful. So I'm going to go with the Jets to pick up their first win of the year, as only 19% of other ESPN users have as well. And we got to separate ourselves. We can't pick the same as everyone every single time. Alrighty, let's get into our 3 o'clock games. First one up, Giants visiting the Broncos. Very interesting game here. Very interesting. As the Broncos, they've been good. Broncos have been good. They're second best team in the AFC West. They're 4-2, 1-3 straight, and only have allowed 95 points on the year. They've also gone 2-0 at home, which you love to see. Now, as for the Giants, this Cam Scadabo and Jackson Dart era has certainly started off with a bang, as they've got another win. They have. They're 2-4, looking good. Two wins with Jackson Dart. But I'm being honest. If I'm being honest, I just don't see them winning. They've already lost three straight on the road, or not three straight, but they've lost three of their road games this year. And this Broncos team is certainly much better when they're on American soil. So I'm going to go with Bo Nix and Cortland Sutton over Jackson Dart and Wandale Robinson. So give me the Broncos over the Giants. I'm not falling for that Giants plus 300 trap. Nice try, betting odds. Next up, another 3:05 game. Colts visiting the Chargers. And I really don't know. Colts are insane. They're actually tied for best team in the league, best team in the AFC currently, as they're 5-1. 5-1. Now, their one loss was on the road this year. Other than that, they've been great at home, 194 points, best offense in the league, and they're taking on a Chargers team who's 4-2, best team in the AFC West. So this is a battle of divisional leaders, and something's just screaming Colts. Really, Colts are plus 110 underdogs. And for the Chargers, Quentin Johnson might miss another game. You know, I just think this Colts team is shocking everyone. I think they're running things in their own way. And, you know, for the Chargers, this will be a type of game they lose for no apparent reason. So I am going to go with the Colts to beat the Chargers. But if Quentin Johnson ends up playing, I may have to switch to the Chargers. Just kidding. I never switch my picks. I always ride with them, the ones I say right here, right now. Two more 3:30 games for you. First up, Commanders visiting the Cowboys. Ooh, this one's always fun. This one's always a good battle in the NFC East. Now, the Commanders, 3-3. Cowboys, 2-3-1. And the Cowboys, they've been suffering some tough losses. They really have. You know, losing by a game-winning field goal to the Panthers. Then tying against the Packers. Then getting blown out by the Bears to an extent. Losing by 17. Pretty much a blowout. And of course, the season opener, losing to the Eagles. Meanwhile, the Commanders recently just lost to the Bears. So both these guys have lost on game-winning field goals last time out. But Cowboys are underdogs at home. That makes literally zero sense. I think this Cowboys team will have some success at home this time around. I'm so shocked they're underdogs. I'm going to eat with my underdog predictions, but they're 1-0 at home on the year. They've played a majority of their games on the road. It's time the Cowboys get some momentum going at home. Give me the Cowboys as plus 105 underdogs at home against a divisional rival that they always play close. Make it make sense. Next up, Packers visiting the Cardinals. And yeah, you know, the Packers are going to be one of those teams where I think they lose the divisional matchups and they're just going to have that one offshoot loss to the Browns. At the end of the day, this Packers team is good. You know, they're really good. They may have lost their one road game to the Browns, but this ain't the Browns. No siree. This is the Cardinals, and the Cardinals are slowly falling apart before our eyes. And it's kind of funny to see because I knew the Cardinals were going to fall off. I knew they weren't nowhere near the level that people were claiming them to be. And, you know, by the way, they've lost four straight after starting 2-0. So make that five straight. Packers over the Cardinals. It's kind of always a thing. Packers go into Arizona, go into Glendale, and dominate the Cardinals. So Packers over Cardinals, that's my pick. With that, we get into a Sunday Night Football showdown as the Falcons visit the 49ers. And wow, shocking results last week as the Falcons won their second straight game, defeating the Bills by 10. I mean, who was this Falcons team? Bijan was a killer. Michael Penix was airing it out. The defense looked incredible. I did not recognize this Falcons team. So if it's this Falcons team shows up this week, they'll get it done. But unfortunately, I don't think they are. I really don't. I think the 49ers at home, even though Falcons are kind of might be a good underdog pick, I like the 49ers here. I do. They're 4-2. I know they lost last week, but I really feel that Bucs loss was just Baker being Baker. You know, Baker, by the way, Bucs are best team in the NFC, so that should say something that the 49ers only loss in the last few games was to the Bucs. So I'm going to go with the 49ers here. I think they're getting, once Brock Purdy's back, they're going to be an even better well-oiled machine. But other than that, I'm not going to judge a loss to the Bucs. What I am going to judge the Falcons is that they have been so unpredictable this year. It feels like they're good, they're bad. They're good, they're bad. They're good, they're bad. They can win this. I'll see some consistency. But right now, I'm riding with the 49ers. With that, we get into our doubleheader on Monday Night Football. And we start things off with the Buccaneers and the Lions. Now, the Lions lost to the Chiefs. Can you believe it? But they are 2-0 at home. And that was on the road. And by the way, the Lions have lost two games this year. They've both taken place on the road. Once to the Chiefs and another time to the Packers. And as for the Bucs, I think they just kind of got that Baker luck. Baker just always kind of finds himself lucky at spurts. And, you know, despite being 3-1 on the road, two-game winning streak, I think I got to go with the Lions here. I really do. You know, I don't really want to say that the Bucs aren't a good team because they're clearly a very good team. But I don't know. Lions at home, getting it done and, you know, getting their revenge in the NFC Championship or whenever the last time they played in the Bucs won. I'm going to go with the Lions in this one. And to close out the week, a 9 p.m. Monday Night Football game. Yeah, I'll be in bed when the time this one's over. Texans visiting the Seahawks. And I don't know. I don't know. Texans are coming in off a bye. They might have some momentum, but this Seahawks team, they've won a game. They've gone 3-0 on the road, but 1-2 at home is a tinge concerning. Let's see, who'd they lose to at home? Lost to the Buccaneers, game-winning field goal, and they lost to the 49ers on a game-winning touchdown. So, alrighty, I'm going to go with the Seahawks here. We're going to go with both the favorites on Monday Night Football, and we'll say that there is a 50 total points scored in the game because we can always win a little tiebreaker. So, we're going to go with Seahawks and Lions on Monday Night Football. I've fallen for too many underdog traps this week. There have been so many good underdogs that you can ride with. But those are your week 7. Wow, already on week 7 of the NFL season. Quick picks in, I guess, under 20 minutes. So they would be considered somewhat quick if we do it in 16 minutes, that is. But yeah, let me know who you guys are riding with, who you guys think are going to win in every single game. And if you put it all in a parlay, maybe you'll retire a rich, rich man. Alrighty, but with that, let's get into our UFC Vancouver predictions because we have this entire UFC Vancouver card to predict. And I still need to study tonight. It's already 9 o'clock at night, so we are going to be getting no sleep, but I'm not stopping until we've gone through this entire card and I've dropped my predictions for each and every one of the fights. So without further ado, let's kick things off in the women's bantamweight division. Wow, women's bantamweight's my favorite division. We have two unranked women as Melissa Croden takes on Tanera Lisboa. Melissa Scare Croden, Tanera Thai Panther Lisboa. Interesting nickname they have here, Goofy. Melissa Grodin, +135, is the underdog at -160. Tanera is the favorite. Good to know. Melissa Grodin coming into this one is making her debut. Never fought in the UFC before. She did go 2-1 in the LFA and is on a 2-fight winning streak. Her only career loss is to Jacqueline Cavalcante, who's currently ranked 11th in the women's bantamweight division, or one of her two losses. She's actually from Canada. I was going to say from Vancouver, but no, she's from Ontario. We're so close enough, all right? So currently rides a 2-fight winning streak out of her 6 wins, 5 KOs, and 1 sub. 100% finish rate. I love that. I love seeing women come in with 100% finish rates, because at times they often don't, and it's ridiculously boring. Like, you get to a point you're just like, come on, why are they all decision fires? So Cronin stepping in, making her debut. We'll see how she does when she takes on Tanera Lisboa. Tanera is 34 years of age, coming in from Sao Paulo, Brazil. And out of her 7 wins, she has 6 finishes. Both of her 3 losses, 2 have came by submission. She's currently 1-2 in the UFC, which I guess isn't awful at the end of the day. She lost her last fight in May to Luiana Santos, getting key locked in round number 2 with a second left. Before that, she'd beaten Ravina Oliveira and submitted Jessica Rose Clark. Look, I don't know nothing about Melissa Cronin or really anything about Tanera Lisboa, so we're just going to go with Melissa Cronin, making her debut, coming in Canada. I'm not going to pick every Canadian on the card, so when I get a chance to pick Canadians, you best know I'm going to go with them. So, women's bantamweight division, Melissa Cronin. Let's try and break a new woman into this division. Next up, middleweight division, as Azamat Ironbekov takes on Yusri Belgori. And this one's interesting. Azamat's 20-3. Yusri is 8-3. 6'5 to 6'. 5 inches in height for Yusri and a whopping 7 inches in reach. 79 to 72 orthodox stance for both of these fighters. Now, this one, I'm not too shocked by Yusri's size, as I've watched him fight before, but I'll tell you what I am excited for, and that's to see Azamat back in the octagon, that is. He's a minus 275 favorite. Yusri is a plus 225 underdog. And Azamat is 4 years younger, 29 to 33. Azamat coming in to this one, he is from Russia, trains at American Top Team, and currently rides an 8-fight winning streak. He's actually from North Austria, Alana. No idea where that's at. 16 of his 20 wins are by finish, 8 KOs, and 8 subs. And yeah, 2-0 currently in the UFC. These two were originally supposed to fight on August 2nd, and this was actually a short notice fight, as Torres Finney was supposed to take on Azamat, but now Azamat has finally landed a fight, and he is ready to go. And you know what? He's had a pretty good start to his UFC career. 2 fights in 2025, 2 round 1 knockouts. He might be in my running for Rookie of the Year. I don't think he's going to win it, but we'll have to see. If he gets another round one knockout here, it would be very impressive. Last time out in May, he finished Ryan Loader in dominant fashion. By the way, Ryan Loader won the Ultimate Fighter, so made quick work of him. Azamat is a funny fighter, funny build, and he has some hilarious call-outs on Twitter. So I've been excited to watch him fight, especially now as he takes on Yusri Belgori. Yusri, coming in, has not had, the best of success, you know, but he's managed to come in with a little contender series victory. He had lost to Marco Tullio on Season 7, and last year on Season 8, came in and got a Round 3 TKO of some random guy who's 9-2 now. So Yusri, coming into this one, currently riding a 3-fight winning streak. He is a kickboxing legend. Of course, he's fought in Adesanya. He's fought in Alex Pereira. He has done a lot. And since he left Contender Series in 2023, went out and picked up 2 wins, and then, of course, last fought on September 10th, 2024. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. Azamat is putting him out of there. Azamat hits like a truck, dare I even say a tank. And Yusri, I know he is the size, he is the length and the height, but I'm telling you, once Azamat connects, Yusri's going to collapse like the twins in a movie of some kind. I'm not making that joke, as I have respect for everyone who died on 9/11. I say we move along before things get a bit freaky as we get into another women's bantamweight matchup. This one's funny. This one is funny. Actually, women's strawweight division. Wait a second. Tanera Lisboa is moving up in weight here? I am so confused right now, but This is apparently in the women's strawweight division as Stephanie Rondina Luciano takes on Ravina Kanodi Oliveira. 6-2-1 for Stephanie, 7-2-1 for Ravina, 5'6-5'5", 1 inch in height for Luciano. They both have a 65-inch reach and both fight in the orthodox fighting position. This one's interesting. Stephanie comes in -350. Ravina is +275. A big, big underdog here. Now, weirdly enough, I believe... Oh, I'm thinking of Luiana Santos here. Okay, but... Stephanie Luciano, either way, actually, I am thinking of the wrong lady here. My bad, Stephanie's Luciano's confusing me left, right, and center. But Stephanie Luciano coming in is currently 1-1 in the UFC and holds a draw on the Contender Series. Luciano has had a decent run, 2 KOs of her 6 victories. She is from Brazil, and yeah, you know, decent run so far. I mean, that hasn't done much. As for opponent Ravina Oliveira, of her 7 wins, she has 6 KOs and 1 sub, so a 100% finish rate we really love. But yes, one of her 2 career losses is to Tanera Lisboa. That was back in October of 2023, so it's been a while. Been a fat minute since she last fought. And as for Steffi Luciano, dropped a split decision to Sam Hughes. So I don't got much to go off of here, but I am going to ride with the -350 favorite, Luciano. I mean, she's not a big favorite for no reason. Like, I'll tell you, she is a favorite for a reason, and she's going to get this one done. But let's get into some more familiar fighters that, you know, I'm somewhat familiar with. And that is lightweight division, Kyle Killshot Prapolic and Drew Dober. I should say I'm familiar with Drew Dober. Kyle Prapolic, this is only his 2nd fight in the UFC. Coming into this contest, you got Kyle as the +350 underdog, -480. Drew Dober is a massive favorite. Kyle Prapolic, 18-9, Drew Dober, 27-15, with a no contest. 5'10-5'8", 2 inches in height for Kyle. Both men fight southpaw and have a 70-inch reach. Funny how that works. Kyle Prapolic had a short notice fight against Benoit Saint Denis back in May, and he got submitted in round number 2. And this is actually his 2nd stint in the UFC, as the man from Windsor, Ontario, Canada, had 2 losses in 2019, decisions in both of them. Of his 18 wins, 10 KOs, and 4 subs, of his 9 defeats, he's been submitted 3 times, so never been knocked out. Before he had a loss to Benoit Saint Denis, he had been on a little 3-fight winning streak, all of them round 1 knockouts. He'd actually won the Samurai Championship and then had lost it in his next fight. So this guy has been all around, but now he's back here in the UFC at 36 years of age, looking to make a run, looking to do something as he takes on Drew Dober. And Drew Dober is 36 as well. Like, this guy ain't no spring chicken, even though he looks young. He unfortunately is on a 3-fight losing streak and hasn't won since October of 2023. So him and Ravina Oliveira in the same boat. Now, as for Drew, he has 20 of his 27 wins by finish, 11 KOs and 9 subs. Of his 15 defeats, 4 KO losses, 4 sub losses. So with a 13-11 record in the UFC, he's been all over the place. But you know what? I really like Drew Dober here. I really do. Kyle didn't leave much to be, you know, desired in that Benoit Saint Denis fight. If anything, it looked like Benoit was just playing with his food a bit. But I'll say Drew Dober should bring it. His last 3 losses have been Manuel Torres, Jean Silva, and Renato Moicano. Those are some pretty tough people. And for Kyle, I just don't have much to go off of. So we're going to go with Drew Dober in this one. But Kyle is a sneaky underdog I could maybe get behind. I use the keyword maybe because I'm still a little uncertain. But we're going to lock in Drew Dober right now. He's our lightweight prediction. We go from lightweight to middleweight as Danny Barlow takes on DeJordan Santos. Danny, left hand to God. Barlow, interesting nickname there, as he takes on DeJordan Shakur. Santos, some goofy nicknames here. Danny Barlow, 9-1, DeJordan Santos, 10-2, 6'2" to 6'0", 2 inches in height for Danny Barlow, and 4 inches in reach. So southpaw orthodox doesn't really matter, as Danny has the size and the weight, it would appear. Size and height, I should say. Danny Barlow coming in the -275 favorite is from Tennessee. Good man from Tennessee. Of his 9 wins, 5 KOs, and 1 sub. Last time out in March, he was knocked out by Sam Patterson in 3 minutes. But before that, he had gone 2-0 in the UFC before his loss, and he had gotten a knockout on the Contender Series, Season 7 in 2023. His biggest win probably is over Josh Quinlan. Actually, maybe Nikola Veritanenov, I don't know, but he hasn't won since August of 2024, was knocked out earlier this year, so I'll be interested to see how his chin is looking when he takes on DeJordan Santos. DeJordan Santos is 10-2 from Miami, Florida, but is originally from Brazil. Trains out of American Top Team, and is currently coming in off a loss. Lost to Ozzy Diaz by unanimous decision back in March. Before that, he had picked up a win on the Contender Series over Will Curry. And Will Curry, I recognize that name for some reason, and I don't know why. But yeah, DeJordan ain't done much. Hasn't really done much. He did land a good amount of significant strikes against Ozzy Diaz, but I'm not thinking he's washed. I'm thinking Danny Barlow can actually get this one done, so I'm going to pick Barlow to beat Santos, but if Barlow loses here, he's probably getting cut. All right, he definitely is. I'm just going to hope that Sam Patterson is as goated as Sam Patterson is, and it was just too big of a step up for Danny Barlow. So Danny's actually moving from welterweight to middleweight as well. Meanwhile, DeJordan Santos is, you know, just staying in the middleweight division. So Danny's moving up in weight. We'll see how it goes. I'm going to go with Danny Barlow. I don't really care who wins. It's weird that we have two guys from the United States fighting on a Canadian card. Next up, flyweight action. This one's fun. This one should be good in the men's flyweight division. The number 14th ranked, Bruno Silva, takes on the unranked, peace of mind, Hyung Sung Park. Ooh, nice. Love Hyung Sung Park. He's actually back for the first time since his main event loss to Tatsuro Taira, which we mentioned earlier in the episode. Bruno, plus 200 underdog. Hyung Sung Park, minus 250 favorite. And size-wise, Hyung Sung has 3 inches in height and 1 inch in reach, and they both fight in the orthodox fighting position. Bruno Bulldog Silva, coming into this one, you know, he was good for a while in the UFC, but he's quickly became 35 years old. You know, of his 14 wins, 10 finishes, of his 7 losses, he's been finished 4 times, more so, you know, known for knockouts, but he has gotten his subs here and there. Currently on a little 2-fight losing streak, Bruno Silva was knocked out by Manel Cape on the final event in 2024, and earlier this year in June by Joshua Van, both coincidentally in round number 3. Before that, he had been on a 4-fight winning streak, but he was only averaging 1 fight per year, which isn't very good. So Bruno kind of coming in off some knockout losses. He's gone 4-4 in the UFC. This is make or break for him when he takes on peace of mind, Hyung Sung Park. And the good thing is Hyung Sung Park has fought in a tough level guy in Tatsuro Taira, and now he's ready to bounce back. The 29-year-old is from South Korea and has 9 of his 10 wins by finish, 4 KOs and 5 subs. Funny enough, he was actually supposed to fight Steve Ersig before he took the Tatsuro Taira fight on short notice. That would unfortunately be his downfall, but before that, wins on road to the UFC, and before that, he had been 3-0 in the UFC, all finishes. So I think Hyung Sung Park gets back to his finishing ways. I'm just going to say that Tatsuro Taira is going to be the biggest name on his law record of losing for a while, as I do believe he is pretty talented. So Bruno Silva, he's on his way out. Hyung Sung Park is on his way up. We're going to go with peace of mind, Hyung Sung Park. From flyweight to bantamweight, we got a fun matchup with the Canadian, can you believe it, as our man, the myth, the legend, the heir, Charles Jourdain. The 29-year-old is a minus 145 favorite over the plus 115 dangerous 39-year-old Davey Grant. This is a good one. This is a good one here. And if you didn't know, Charles Jourdain is actually from Canada. That is right. Charles Jourdain hails from the lovely province of Quebec. All right. So no one from Vancouver yet, but from Quebec, good enough. And size-wise for these guys, fairly similar. I mean, 1 inch in height for Jourdain is it, but this is actually Jourdain's second fight at bantamweight. That's right. Her career featherweight is now moving down to bantamweight, and this will be his second bantamweight fight, I guess, of the year. Of his 16 wins, he has 14 finishes, 8 KOs and 6 subs. Of his 8 defeats, he's only ever been finished twice. Currently has gone 7-7 with a draw in the UFC, but was able to pick up a submission win earlier in November. Okay, so it's been almost a year. Never mind. I thought he had gotten a fight earlier this year, but I guess I was wrong. Actually, he was supposed to fight Ricky Simone, I think, in Atlanta, and that fell apart. So now he finds himself fighting Davey Grant. But by the way, the last man to beat Charles Jourdain, Gene Silva, in June of 2024. So clearly they were having to fight good guys before he dropped down to bantamweight. His opponent, the 39-year-old from another than London, England? Or no, Bishop Auckland, England. Not close enough. If it isn't, I have no idea. But now he trains in Las Vegas. Of his 15 wins, 11 finishes, 4 KOs and 7 subs. And he may have never been knocked out, but he has been submitted 4 of his 7 defeats. Davy Grant currently coming in as a big upset win over Damon Blackshear in July, where he lost round one but came back to win round two and three. Before that, he'd beaten Ramon Tavares in December of 2024, leaving him on a two-fight winning streak, and he's actually 4-1 in his last five. So Davy Grant is certainly very good, but I'm riding with Canada here in Charles Jourdain. I gotta ride with Jourdain, man. He's the Canadian. He's getting another bantamweight fight in, and if he fights how he did against Victor Graham, he'll get another finish. So, Charles Jourdain, I hate to go with another favorite, but you gotta sometimes with these guys because they're pretty freaking good. From bantamweight to lightweight, we have Kyle the Monster Nelson taking on Matt the Steamroller Frivola. 5'9 to 5'11, 2 inches in height for Kyle. They both have a 71-inch reach advantage, and a switch stance for Kyle is opposite the orthodox stance for Matt Frivola. Checking out the odds on these two guys, and I believe this may be opening the main card, or I don't know. It may be the final prelim. We'll have to see, but Kyle Nelson, plus 115, is the underdog. Matt Steamroller Frivola is coming in as the minus 135 favorite. Now, I have seen both these guys fight before, and I'm a little torn on who to pick here. I can't even lie. So Kyle Nelson coming in to this one is coming in off a loss to Steve Garcia in September of 2024. So it's been a while before he was even linked to a fight. He has won 10 of his 16 fights by finish, 6 KOs and 4 subs. And of his 6 losses, he's been finished 4 times. He's gotten 4-5-1 in the UFC, so not the most impressive. His last win came in March of 2024 over Bill Algeo, which might have been a early stoppage. So Kyle is from Canada, so that is the one thing he has on his side, hailing from Ontario, of all places. His opponent, Matt Frivola, is not from Canada. He is from New York and now fights out of Tampa, Florida. Matt is coming in off a loss to Fares Zayam in France. That was over a year ago, September of 2024. And he's currently lost his last two fights to Frenchmen, Benoit Saint-Denis and Fares Zayam. So hopefully Kyle Nelson is not French, as I am going to predict Matt Frivola to get this one done. And of his 11 wins, he has 7 finishes. And he recently found the ability to knock people out when he went on a little knockout spree of Gennaro Valdez, Ottoman Aztir, and Drew Dober, a man we just mentioned. But yeah, losing to Benoit Saint-Denis and Fares Zayam are both really tough names, and same for Kyle Nelson with Steve Garcia, but I am going to predict Drew Dober to get this one, or not Drew Dober, Matt Frivola to get this one done. They're kind of the same fighter at the end of the day. I can't even lie, they're both old strikers that just like to swing and such. But yeah, we're just battling out with 30-year-olds, I guess, for some of these prelim matchups. But let's get into the main card here. You know, I don't even know if this is the official main card, actually, but you know, fights get good from here on out, but we're kicking things off. This is the main card now that I've looked, and actually Kyle Nelson versus Matt Frivola is the main card. I didn't have time to take notes, so I'm doing this all on Tapeology. That's why this sounds very unorthodox compared to my normal prediction videos. But Cody Gibson and Al Gorquin in the men's bantamweight division is up next. And yes, I believe neither of these men are from Canada. Oh well. But Cody Gibson is minus 120. Al Gorquin is plus 100. Well, that about just seals the deal on who I'm picking. But yeah, Cody Gibson coming into this one. I mean, this guy is 38 years old. Oh my goodness. He does have 3 inches in height over Al Gorquin and 2 inches in reach. That's about it. That's about it. Now, for Al Gorquin coming in, he is 32 years old, hailing from Mongolia, China, and of his 25 wins, he has only 9 finishes. This man has 24 decisions out of his 38 professional fights. So he's gone 3-4 in the UFC, hasn't done much impressive, but his last loss was at UFC 306 in September 2024 to Raul Rosas Jr., of all people. Some other losses, Ayman Zahabi, Cody Durden, you know, his last 2 losses are to top-level bantamweight. So if you want to call Raul Rosas Jr. bantamweight. And as for Cody Gibson, he was submitted by Damon Blackshear in March of 2025. He has never done anything much. I've never really been impressed with Cody Gibson, to be honest. I really don't find him interesting at all. 12 of his 21 wins are by finish, and of his 11 losses, 5 of them have been by submission. So we're going to predict Al Gorquin to get the sub. He is a underdog, which I like, and I just don't really care for Cody Gibson. So Al Gorquin all the way. I guess we're going with a Chinaman over a statesman. My bad. But let's get into our top 4 fights of the evening. And we start off our first of these with the number 2 ranked women's flyweight, the former title challenger Manon Fiora, taking on number 5 ranked, the Canadian Jasmine Jassou Davicious. And Manning coming in, minus 235 is a big favorite. At plus 190, a slight underdog is Jasmine Jasu DeVicious. 35 to 36, 1 year in age for Jasmine. They're both kind of older here. 5'7 for both of them. 68-inch reach to 66-inch reach in favor of Jasmine Jasu DeVicious. And in terms of our stances, we've got two orthodox fighters. So Manny Fiora, currently ranked at number 2, coming to this one, does hail from France. She trains at the Boxing Squad, of all places. Of her 12 wins, half of them are by finish with 6 KOs. Of her 2 defeats, she's never been finished. She's currently 7-1 in the UFC and lost her first fight since her first ever career fight to Valentina Shevchenko in a title fight. Now, mind you, 48-47s across the board. It was a close fight. It really was. Her other wins in the UFC, Rose Namajunas, Erin Blanchfield, Caitlin Serminara, Jennifer Meyer, Mara Balsillo, Tabitha Ritchie. She's fought some very good competitors since her inception. But this will be a tough one here as she takes on Jasmine Jasu DeVicious, who is on a 5-fight winning streak. She hails from St. Catharines, Ontario, Canada, and trains at Niagara Top Team with Mike Mallett, who we're about to mention. Over 14 wins, she has 6 finishes, and she's never been finished in her 3 defeats. Currently 8-2 in the UFC, she recently submitted Jessica Andrade in under 3 minutes at UFC 315, and that actually was in Canada, so good for her. Before that, she had beaten Mara Bueno Silva in February of 2025, so she is looking to be one of the biggest risers in the women's division this year as she looks for her 3rd win. Now, I really do like Jasmine Jasu DeVicious here. I think as an underdog, she's super fun, but I'm going to go with Manon Fiora. I just think Manon's good. You know, especially giving Valentina Shevchenko a run for her money, I can't count her out here. I always count former title challengers out. Now, mind you, you're probably about to see me pick against a lot of former champions and title challengers coming up. But in this one, I am going to go with Manon Fiora to get this one done. There's just something about her that's screaming, I'm going to get this done, and I'm going to outwit the grappler that is Jasmine Jasu DeVicious. So don't even be surprised if Manon gets a shocking TKO and silences the Canadian crowd. But we're not picking against all Canadians as Marlon Vera takes on Amin Zahabi. Here we go. Top 10 men's bantamweights. The number 7th ranked Mario Bautista takes on the number 9 ranked Amin Zahabi. This one's been good. This one I've been eyeing for a bit. The plus 120 underdog, Chito Marlon Vera, is coming in this one. Only 32. I swear he was older. As Amin Zahabi, who feels younger at minus 140 favorite, is 37. MMA's weird. MMA is really weird like that, where you could have guys who've just been at it for so long taking out guys who are kind of new to the UFC that are older, yet are coming in to take their spot. The number 7th ranked Marlon Vera. Been with the UFC since 2014. Been a while. Been a minute. Born in Ecuador, now fighting out of Irvine, California. He has 18 wins of his 23 wins, 18 of them are by finish. Of his 10 losses, he's never been finished. He was actually supposed to fight Mario Bautista in May of this year and in June, and unfortunately, he pulled out of both of those fights, leaving Mario without a single opponent. So now he finds himself finally fighting for the first time since August 2024. Last time he fought was the first time he was ever dropped in his UFC career, and that was against Deiveson Figueiredo. Before that, he had lost a championship fight to Sean O'Malley. So his last win was Pedro Munhoz in 2023. And to make matters better, the last win before that, Dominic Cruz. Last win before that, Rob Font. Last win before that, Frank Yeager. Last win before that, David Grant. So it's been a while since he's fought a tough guy on the come up, and that's exactly what Amin Zahabi is. Amin Zahabi. That's right. He's 37 years old. Somehow 5 years this senior. Marlon Vera. He hails from Quebec, Canada. On a 6-fight winning streak, 8 of his 13 wins are by finish. Of his 2 defeats, he's only ever been TKO'd once. But yeah, currently on this little 6-fight winning streak, he is actually the man who retired Jose Aldo earlier this year in 2025. So he's coming in. Big wins left, right, and center. And you know what? I gotta ride with him here. I mean, why not? Why not? Let's give him a shot. Amin Zahabi, if you're beating Jose Aldo, you statistically, you theoretically should beat Marlon Vera. I don't know about statistically, but theoretically, you should beat him. And Marlon hasn't fought for a year, looked out of his shape the last 2 fights he's been in. There's no way he can be good, right? We'll have to see. So, Amin over Marlon, that's our pick. With that, we get into the co-main event. And it is between the number 15th ranked welterweight Kevin Trailblazer Holland back for the 4th time this year. Actually, this is his 5th fight this year. Son of a gun, Kevin's been on an absolute tear as he takes on the Canadian, Mike proper mallet. 28-14 with a no contest. Kevin Holland has an insane record and pace. He really has. Mike Mallett is 12-2-1. 81 inches in reach, 273, a big 8-inch reach for Kevin Holland, and 2 inches in height, 6'3" to 6'1". As for the odds makers on this, plus 115 for Kevin, minus 140 for Mike Mallett. Let's start with Kevin, the 15th ranked welterweight, 32 years old from Fort Worth, Texas. He trains at Travis Luter MMA. Of his 28 wins, 23 finishes. Of his 14 defeats, 6 times he's been finished. Currently 15-11 in the UFC, which is insane. He has had 4 fights this year. Started off 2025, unfortunately, taking on Rainer De Ritter. He was able to bounce back in London with a performance of the night decision win over Gunnar Nelson. He followed it up with a UFC 316 and a Conda choke of Vicente Luque before dropping a decision to Daniel Rodriguez at UFC 318, which was, and I kid you not, one of the most insane fights I've ever witnessed live. That was insane. Round one was the swing round, as round two goes to Daniel Rodriguez and round three goes to Kevin Holland. Now, I thought Kevin had done enough to win, but I guess not. I guess not. It was a close fight, though. And by the way, Kevin Holland's already calling for a third fight this year with either Daniel Rodriguez or Neil Magny. So absolutely love Kevin Holland. His pace, his just stamina for the year. It's crazy. And he finds himself in an actual fight against an up-and-comer here in Mike Proper Mallett. Mike Mallett is from Ontario, Canada. Trains at the same gym as Jasmine Jasu Davicius and is currently on a 2-fight winning streak. Of his 12 wins, 11 finishes. Both of his losses have came by knockout. Mike Mallett had been on an absolute tear coming into the UFC off of Dan White's Contender Series and started off with 3 straight finishes and was a very impressive 10-1. That was until he ran into Neil Magny, who humbled him with 15 seconds left in the fight. Insane. He then went the distance for the first time in his career, beating Trevin Giles last time they were in Canada in 2024. Last time they were in the country of Canada in 2024, he fought on that card. The last time they were there in 2025, he fought and knocked out Charles Radke 26 seconds into round number 2. So, how will Mike Mallett do against Kevin Holland? I give him a very great chance here. I think his abilities to knock guys out are impressive. I really think that in terms of striking, he's probably a bit better than Kevin Holland, but here's one thing I'm not going to do, and that's pick against my boy, Kevin Holland. I think Kevin Holland has just a bit of luck on his side, a bit of fate, if you will. Plus, I've seen him lose to Neil Magny and Trevin Giles and, you know, Charles Radke step down from Neil Magny. So this is a very interesting fight for both guys. I got Kevin Holland, you know, beating the Canadian and then cutting a hilarious promo. I can even see him giving Mike Mallett his first ever submission loss here. I'm sorry, Mallett. I would love to ride with you, but I got to go with my boy, Kevin Trailblazer Holland. With that, we get into the main event, and if you want to talk about fighters of the year, guys, I mean, Rainer De Ritter, holy cow, coming into this one, he's currently the number 4 ranked men's middleweight, and he is the minus 210 favorite as he takes on the plus 170 underdog, Brendan All In Allen. Now, it was supposed to be Anthony Fluffy Hernandez. Unfortunately, Anthony got injured, so in is stepping Brendan Allen. So best of luck to both these men, but Rainer De Ritter, I mean, come on. 35 years old from the Netherlands, 5-fight winning streak. 18 of his 21 wins are by finish, and this man is coming to the UFC and just taking it by storm. 4-0 in the UFC, and this will be his 5th fight in under a year. Debuted in November of 2024. Since then, has gotten 3 finishes and won a split decision in one of the best main events maybe of the year against Robert Whittaker for Fight Nights, that is. He's also beaten Kevin Holland and Bo Nickel this year. Just racking up names on his record. Former 1 double champion in the middleweight, and I don't know if it was light heavyweight or welterweight. I would assume welterweight, but certainly in middleweight. And now he finds himself against Brendan All In Allen. Brendan Allen trains at Killcliffe FC. He's 29 years old, and you know what? 19 of his 25 wins are by finish, and he's only been finished 3 times in his career. Currently 13-4 in the UFC. He's coming off a win over Marvin Vettori. That's right, back in July. He started out the year pretty rough, losing to Anthony Hernandez. Before that, had lost to Nazem Imavov. But after a win over Vettori, he found himself back in the mix. He's currently ranked at number 9, and now is taking on the number 4 guy. And as much as I would love to pick Brendan Allen, there's no shot that I'm picking him. No. I am riding with Rainer De Ritter. And by the way, I'm going to go with a round 1 sub. I think Rainer gets him out of there. I think Rainer knows his game plan. I think Brendan Allen has been great so far, but he's lost to top-level guys, and I think Rainer De Ritter is a top-level guy. So Rarity Ritter, round one sub, lock it up, take it to the bank. Why not? Because it's spicy, it's fun, and I can make predictions any which way I want. And we've been very good on the year. We are in the plus 130 range on picks, and after going 11-1 at Rio, I certainly have a big card ahead of me. But I'm not so confident about these fights, I can't lie. I've been super swamped, and I'm super busy, and the fact that I've wasted almost an hour and a half of my night recording this is not a good sign. But with that, ladies and gentlemen, I will send you all on your way. Let me know who you're riding with for the NFL this week, your thoughts on Contender Series, all the new fights, and even your UFC Vancouver predictions, as we'll be back on next week to recap everything that went down. But I just realized there was no Vancouver fighters. We had Canadian fighters, but no one from Vancouver, so kind of weird. We've gone to Ontario, we have Ontarioans, we've gone to Toronto, we have Torontoians, but we don't have any Vancouverans, huh? I don't even know if that's how you say it, but ladies and gentlemen, I have a lot of studying to do. I got a lot of stuff to do in general. I gotta get this uploaded, so I'll see you next time on the Surprise Jab Podcast.